Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayen Dangbior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Thursday, November 21st, 2019. South Sudan is allowed to buy a slot for a satellite in space.
For us to, for broadcasting, okay, whether it is radio, whether it is TV, for broadcasting, the rural areas are not covered. Covering it with satellite will be more cost-effective.
And the government says it is giving the NPTC the rest of its pledged money to complete pre-transitional activities.
President Salva Kiir has a disbursed in the account of the NPTC another $40 million.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The Geneva-based International Telecommunication Union granted South Sudan a slot in orbit for a satellite. South Sudan's Director General of National Communication Authority, Lado Kenny, says satellite orbital slots are important sovereign rights. Kenny says having a satellite provides opportunities and will help expand the state-owned South Sudan Broadcasting Corporation to more areas, noting South Sudan has paid millions of dollars to commercial satellite companies for its television broadcast.
You know, one of the sovereignty of a country is to have its own satellite, for example. That is why in this conference we managed to review one of the radio regulations resolutions, and then South Sudan has been allocated a slot in the orbit, geostationary orbit, and then also a frequency. So now we are free to build a satellite and launch it anytime that we need it, because we have that slot available,
and
which
how,
is really a big.
How would that satellite help South Sudan? Could you explain?
You know, South Sudan is a very vast country. For us to for broadcasting, okay, whether it is radio, whether it is TV, for broadcasting, the rural areas are not covered. Covering it with satellite would be more cost-effective than, you know, using the terrestrial coverage. That means you have to put a lot of repeater stations around to transmit the signal from the main station in Juba, for example, to Rumbek. Yeah. But if you have got a satellite, what you need is only you need the transmitter in Juba and then a receiver in Rumbek. So you just link and that one is taken immediately. Our rural areas also are not connected with the communication. Having a satellite, you can also communicate more easily, because now the cost of operation of for the telecommunication for these mobile operators is very high, and they are concentrated only on urban areas. The rural areas are not well connected. So because of the vastness of the country, you know, it is just vast. You need a lot of station to take the signal to those rural areas. And if the rural area is not having enough population, then it is not viable for the businessman to take the signal there or make a service there. So it is for the government now to link up in a public-private partnership to bring those services to the people at the rural areas.
How long will it take South Sudan to launch its satellite, given that they have guaranteed a slot?
What we have done as a technical people, we have guaranteed the right for having that slot. It's now the policy of the government. If the government really see it a priority to service the people in the rural areas or the vast areas of South Sudan with satellite services, they could allocate the funds that are necessary. Within 3 years, as I said, within 3 to 5 years, we can be able to build a satellite and launch it. If the government doesn't have the money, we can have, as I said already, public-private partnership. There's a lot of companies that build satellite. They could be also, sit with the government and agree on a certain agreement on how to finance that satellite and how to recover the investment on it. Because it is a period of 15 years. Even if you invest $100 million, you can be able to recover it within 7 or so years. South Sudan is now paying yearly almost over $1 million USD for broadcasting the TV of South Sudan. And that money goes to private companies like ISAT and NileSat.
And talk to me about manpower and technical know-how. Is South Sudan having the manpower and the technical know-how to build its own satellite?
At the moment, we may not have that capability, but as I said, in a public-private partnership, there are companies that are willing to build the satellite if you have the agreement with them, like ISAT, for example. So those companies, we can be able to have an agreement, and in that agreement, part of it will be building the capacity of South Sudan. We have a lot of young engineers who graduated from, other universities like in India, like in China, even in South Sudan, University of Juba. There are a lot of potential, you know. It needs just the training, and then they will pick up.
That's Lado Kenyi, South Sudan's Director General of the National Communication Authority, speaking via WhatsApp with my colleague John Tanza from a radio communication conference at the Egyptian coastal town of Sharm el-Sheikh earlier today. The South Sudan government has pledged $40 million to the National Pre-Transitional Committee, or NPTC, the body responsible for implementing pre-transitional activities of the revitalized peace deal. The money is part of the $100 million the Kiir administration pledged to provide for implementing unresolved pre-transitional activities, including security arrangements. Onen Walter Solomon reports for VOA from Juba.
Speaking in Arabic, Tutke Ugalwak, chairman of the NPTC and President Salva Kiir's advisor on security matters, said at a news conference yesterday the president is following through on his commitment to provide the NPTC with $100 million.
President Salva Kiir has disbursed in the account of the NPTC another $40 million to support the implementation of the remaining tasks within the 100 days extended period.
Galwak made the announcement at the end of a two-day joint security mechanisms workshop in Juba, in which representatives of the former warring parties discussed activities to be implemented during the extended pre-transitional period, including timeframes for completing each activity. Gabriel Changson Chang, who represents the South Sudan Opposition Alliance on the National Pre-Transitional Committee, told South Sudan in Focus last month that at the time, the NPTC received $42 million of the $100 million the Kiir administration pledged. Agostino Jorge, interim chairman of the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, the body overseeing implementation of the peace deal, called on the NPTC to manage the funds in a transparent manner.
The NPTC should open exclusive accounts for each mechanism and deposit amounts commensurate to operations of the specific pre-transitional tasks to be implemented.
Joram Bishwaro, the African Union's representative to the South Sudan peace process, said at the workshop that the $40 million should be used for its intended purpose.
Such a finance should be routed to the cantonment or to accomplish the security arrangement. Where people are going hungry, screening is stalled, training has not started, and consequently having a unified army is questionable. With the little resources we have, let us root it there.
Bisuaro praised SPLM-IO leader Riek Machar for ordering some opposition officials to vacate the hotels where they have been accommodated for several months at government expense. Angelina Teny, who heads the Strategic Defense and Security Review Board, says the parties will screen, train, and unify their forces into a national force within the remaining time.
The first priority basically is the screening of the forces so that, and then the selection so that they can go to the training centers, so that the training can now commence. Because without screening those forces and without selecting the right number of forces and people with the right criteria to actually go to training. The other priority is basically to make sure that all the training centers are ready and up to receiving forces.
Teng says not all training facilities have been ready to receive forces. Njoroge says he has these recommendations for the NPTC and the other security mechanisms during the 100-day extended period.
Each mechanism should establish and commit to an effective and realistic system of coordination between all the various mechanisms to avoid duplication of effort and ensure effective and efficient utilization of resources. And each mechanism should develop a standardized and regular reporting system so that progress can be clearly evaluated against benchmarks.
In all, the government has disbursed $82 million of the $100 million it pledged to support the implementation of pre-transitional activities. For VOA News, I'm Onen Walter Solomon in Nimule.
Traders in Juba are counting losses after a fire burned down part of the capital's customs market Tuesday night, destroying goods and property worth more than 10 million South Sudanese pounds. Traders say more than 15 shops that stocked clothes, utensils, and other items burned to the ground. As Dengai Deng reports for VOA from Juba, the traders say Juba firefighters never answered the call for help.
Speaking in Arabic, Yasir Medin, who owns a clothes shop in Custom Market, says he lost about 500,000 South Sudanese pounds and $3,000 in addition to his entire inventory in Tuesday's night fire.
I left the market around 6:00 p.m. after I closed my shop. Just some minutes after I reached home, I got a call from others saying that the shop were on fire. I went back, but I found the fire was all over. My shop was already finished, so I started to remove items from my neighbor's shop. There was an old man near. He was the one who helped us with a basin of water. We used it to put off the fire.
Speaking in Arabic, Rachel Anur, another trader who owns a utensil store in Custom Market, says she lost her entire stock of inventory in Tuesday's night fire.
I was informed at home that the shop has burned, and I don't know the cause of the fire. I don't know how to do the calculation now. The shop was full of various utensils. I cannot tell you now all my losses in terms of cash. I am confused. Nothing is left. All is gone with the fire.
Anur says she cannot understand why firefighters did not respond to the emergency. Daniel Justin, a spokesman of the South Sudan National Police Service, says the fire brigade did not respond on time because they did not have water tankers to put out the fire. He says police and traders used nearby private water tankers to put out the Nyokuren West market fire.
The total number of people injured during the operation are 8 in number. All of them were escorted to the hospital. No case of death registered. We launched an investigation. There is still, usually sometimes in very big cases, our Directorate of Fire Brigade, sometimes we use these fire cylinders. Yeah, and they are there in the shops, but we could not.
Speaking in Arabic, trader Mark Tijani says he lost a stock worth $30,000 in Tuesday's night fire.
Allah ina maragna menina saa 5:30 gafalna wa maragna. Ashena albet.
I closed my shop at 5:30 p.m. and went home. Shortly, we received phone calls and we came running but could not rescue anything. I have lost mattresses, bed sheets, sewing machines, clothes, carpets, a lot of things. There were no firefighters. We used soils and water from basins to put off the fire.
Samuel Elias Suwaka, director of Nyokuren Zone at the Juba City Council, says the cause of the fire is unknown, but council authorities have arrested one person accused of starting the fire.
One mushkila betal harigada.
We have arrested one suspect in connection to the problem of the market fire. He is being suspected that he might be the one who set the market on fire. He is arrested and now he's under investigation.
Justin says this is the third time a fire has broken out at the custom market since the beginning of this year. For VOA News, I am Deng Gai Deng in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Sudanese get a ride on Khartoum's new metro system. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you think that the arts can help promote peace and fight extremism?
You can use art to sensitize and enlighten people, you know, on the tenet of peace and conflict and other things.
It's a means of communication that you can affect different people at different times. So I think it can help.
I think it does because it speaks a lot of sense to us if we really pay attention to what it gives us.
It can try to promote some peace through communication, like people sing about some things and they really inspire someone, you know.
An art can be done to remind us of peace or to remind us of a troubled past. And when we see this, it should remind us not to do anything that would jeopardize the peace we have.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Khartoum residents are celebrating today's launch of the city's first ever metro system. Citizens say the metro will ease transportation and allow them to catch up on their work across Khartoum. The state governor says the project's launch is in line with the principles of the revolution, which called for providing services to the people. Michael Atit was at the launch and has this report for VOA from Khartoum.
That is one of the six new trains running for the first time in the Sudanese capital, Khartoum. It is carrying state officials on the test trip from Khartoum's main station to Khartoum North Station. Each train has six separate air-conditioned units with 400 seats and windows adorned with blue curtains. Speaking in Arabic, Solara Ahmed Al-Badawi, executive director for transport in Khartoum State, tells South Sudan in Focus that this day marks a milestone achievement for Sudan.
This is a huge transformation and a new development for our Sudanese people. It is a first experience and definitely people will find it different. But it will not take much time. They will get used to it.
At the metro's official launch, Khartoum State Acting Governor, Lieutenant General Ahmed Abdun Hamad, calls the event an achievement for Sudan's revolution. Speaking in Arabic, Abdun says he instructed management to transport citizens across Khartoum free of charge for the rest of the week. Ticketing will begin on Sunday, which Abdun says will be affordable for all.
An ordinary person shall pay only 10 Sudanese pounds and 5 pounds for students. This money is for the whole trip, regardless of the destination of all the passengers. This ticket is subsidized from Khartoum's government because we are also considering the situation of our citizens who are facing a lot of challenges with earning living.
Zuhal Muhammad Musa resides in Omdurman neighborhood and works as a civil servant at the Ministry of Physical Infrastructure in Khartoum. Speaking in Arabic, Musa says even though her area is not part of the railway network, she says the metro will help millions of Khartoum residents.
People have been suffering and queuing for long hours at the bus stations, including people with special needs, children, students, and all the ordinary working class citizens.
I have experienced this suffering. So today, as I stepped in this train for the first time, I am so happy.
Abdurrahim Muhammad, technical manager at Noble's company, which constructed the main stations and extended the railway line, says the two trains that will operate for 1 month during phase one will cover 17 kilometers from Khartoum to Kadoro northward and 12 kilometers from Khartoum to Al Shajara southward. He says the plan in total is to cover about 85 kilometers in Khartoum, Omdurman, and Khartoum north.
During this, they are going to operate these trains to cover the critical hours early morning and the end of the days. And after the evaluation, they are going to increase the number, the frequency of the journey per days, because they have 6 units.
Lack of transportation and chronic shortages of fuel and bread were considered the main causes of the uprising and protests that led to the ouster of President Omar al-Bashir in April. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
The South Sudan government opened a 100-megawatt power plant, which is expected to provide electricity to up to 70,000 homes in the capital 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The plant is a public-private partnership between the government and the Eritrean-owned Ezra Power Company. Manyang David Mayar has more for VOA from Juba.
South Sudan President Salva Kiir Mayardit threw the switch at the Ezra Power Station in the early morning hours, and light immediately appeared in parts of the capital. The same areas have had no electricity since 2013, when the government-owned city power station shut down due to fuel shortages. The president calls the project a major milestone in the development of South Sudan.
More important, it is hope for us as the people that our dreams will not just remain dreams, but will become a reality. This project will spur development across the sectors. More than 70% of businesses in South Sudan run their own diesel-fired generators for power supply, while homes depend on kerosene. Electricity is regarded as one of the most serious business constraints. This is a problem that this project aims to alleviate.
In 2013, President Kiir says his administration shut down the state-owned power plant due to what he calls operational challenges. Since then, most government institutions, hospitals, and homes have been relying on small generators for power. Kiir says today marks the start of a new era in South Sudan.
No more war, time for development and services delivery. And in this context, I urge our development partners and other members of private sector to join us in this journey.
Ezra Power General Manager Meron Tekia Ezra says the company invested more than $200 million to supply 100 megawatts of power to the South Sudanese capital.
2017, this contract was awarded to us, to Ezra Group, on a basis of BOOT, build, own, operate, 100 megawatts for 17 years.
The African Development Bank's country director, Benedict Kanu, said it invested more than $30 million to see power distributed across the city.
I'm very honored and delighted to be part of this historic and distinguished watershed event on the commissioning of the Ezra Power Plant, which you will agree uses and is dependent on the African Development Bank financed Juba Power Distribution System and Expansion Project.
National Minister for Energy and Dams, Dilma Thok, says his office is concerned that some customers will not be able to afford the cost of having electricity.
The tariff for the consumers, that is household, is $0.395.
After 17 years, Ezra will turn over the control of the power plant to the government of South Sudan. For VOA News, Amanyang David Mayer in Juba.
A 15-year-old girl from Cameroon has won the 2019 International Children's Peace Prize. Davina Malum was rewarded for her efforts in promoting children's rights and warning them against joining armed groups such as Boko Haram. Moki Edwin Kinzeka visited schools where Malum has been preaching peace and reports from Yaoundé.
Hundreds of children from schools in Yaoundé glued to their TV screens applauded Wednesday as Davina Malum was given the International Children's Peace Prize for 2019 in The Hague on the occasion of Universal Children's Day. This is no small award. The other winner of the prize was 16-year-old Greta Thunberg, the climate activist from Sweden, who was unable to attend the ceremony but said in a statement that she is incredibly grateful and honored for this prize. Among those watching Malum accept the award was a civic education teacher, Ntigang Umaru.
C'est grâce à Davina que les enfants ont cessé de consommer la drogue à l'école.
Umaru says thanks to Davina Malum's association to Children for Peace, many young people in their schools and neighborhoods no longer consume drugs. He says after Davina Malum's talks and sensitization caravans, the community was alert and the police now carry on regular controls to make sure drugs and alcohol are not sold around schools and to children. She says she is very proud of the 15-year-old and wishes her well. Malum created Children for Peace in 2014 after she visited Cameroon's northern border with Nigeria, where Boko Haram terrorism has killed more than 27,000 people and displaced 2 million others. She says she was horrified that children were the greatest victims of the war and started thinking of what she could do to help those who were joining Boko Haram either by force or out of ignorance.
I noticed that the rights of children, especially for girls, were violated. You see a girl of 5 years getting married to an old man of 60 years. You see boys, girls who are carriers of bombs. So I decided to create that association to stimulate the civic and voluntary engagement of children in the fight against violent extremism, to make them be peace builders in their community, to also make them to be change makers.
Children for Peace now has a network of 100 children across the 10 regions of Cameroon. She has organized inter-community children's peace camps, established peace clubs in mosques, and together with other children, made a children's declaration against violent extremism. Malum says she believes everyone can make a difference in bringing peace to their societies.
My message to the world is that when the power of love will be greater than the love of power, man shall have another name, which is God. And that a youth, where you are as an individual, you can change the world and make a difference where you are going to.
Malum says her main concern now is for peace to return to the restive English-speaking regions of Cameroon, where most schools have been closed for 3 years due to fighting between armed separatists and the military. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
And that's our show for this Thursday. We leave you with the song Achuetan by Kofi Nti and Afori Amponsa. I'm Ayen Dangbior in Washington. We appreciate you tuning in, and we hope you can join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.